It's good to see everybody on this Saturday morning. It was a good week. I put my hat on. There you go. Thank God they won. I would have gotten so much crap. For the people listening, I went to Duke and they beat Kansas. And if we'd lost, it would have been my fault and everybody would have given me crap. And so, you know, it's all about me, right? And you understand if they lose, it's the whole world's watching me and it's my fault. I used to think that way. I don't think that way anymore. Too much. All right, let's say the set-aside prayer. God, set aside everything I think I know about you, God, the steps, recovery, the big book, what's best for me, what's best for others. Help me let go of all my old ideas so I can experience new truth and your truth. Help me carry your message today. Amen. Okay. We're on working with others. There's so much in here. A lot of people don't read it because they think it's step 12, but working with others is really step one. It's all the steps. It's the spiritual principles. Remember, step 12 is practice these principles in all our affairs. That's not talked about a lot. How you practice the principles in all your affairs is in working with others, to wives, family afterwards, to employers, and we'll be covering those as well. We went to page 100, but I'm going to read I'm going to reread on 99. We have some family members here. We have some people new in sobriety who are having issues at home. It says, if there be divorce or separation, there should be no, page 99, undue haste for the couple to get together. The man should be sure of his recovery. The wife should fully understand his new way of life. That's where Al-Anon's been helpful with that for the spouses. If their old relationship is to be, and the spouse and or the husband needs to have a new way of life too, both parties. If their old relationship is to be resumed, it must be on a better basis. What basis? The basis of dependence upon God. Since the former did not work, this means a new attitude and spirit all around. Sometimes it is the best interest of all concerned the couple remain apart. Obviously, no rule can be laid down. Let the alcoholic, this is what I tell people, continue his program day and day and see and be the best spouse or husband and father and child and employer and human being and AA member they can be. Just work on that. Everything will be okay. When the time for living together has come, it will be apparent to both parties. Here's a famous two paragraphs. They've changed my life. I'm going to read them again. I covered them last week. Let no alcoholic, of course he will, say he cannot recover unless he has his family back, or it's money, or it's the job, or the car, or whatever. This just isn't so. In some cases, the wife will never come back for one reason or another. And here's a reminder that I have to remember all the day, everybody, I have to remind myself that my recovery is not dependent upon people or places or things or circumstances. It's dependent upon my relationship with God. There's no suggestions there, is it? And if you're dependent and your relationship with God, and we talked about prayer at one of the noon meetings, Chuck C. said, how do you pray? And Chuck C. was from A New Pair of Glasses, which is a fabulous book. You can get it on Amazon. You can listen to his recordings on XA speakers. He gave a men's retreat in 1978 that somebody, thank God, recorded. He was a brilliant man. He was the father of the famous actor Richard Chamberlain. He got sober in 1945. They said, Chuck, how do you pray? You know what he said? Every thought's a prayer. Now, I thought about that. I thought about that through the years, and it finally became clear to me that whatever you're praying is what you're focusing on. Are you focusing on God, or are you focusing on getting a new car? Are you focusing on loving your neighbor as yourself, or are you focusing on a resentment or a fear? What are you focusing on is where it becomes your higher power at that moment. And so step 10 tells us whenever we're focusing away from God, to ask God at once to get us back to focusing on Him. It says, we have seen men get well whose families have not returned at all. We have seen others slip when the family came back too soon. Now here's one of the musts in the big book. They took the musts out of how it works, the three pages. They didn't want alcoholics to feel like they must do anything. And so they had a big discussion about it. And then, so they said, okay, we're going to take the musts out of how it works preamble. So you read page 60, and it tells you what you must do. You must be rid of selfishness. You get it. They put all the musts in the rest of the book because these are musts if you want to make it. It says, both you and the new man must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress. Now, it doesn't say that you walk ahead of the new man or you walk faster than the new man. You walk together. This is, we do it together, day by day, in the path of spiritual progress. Now, what is the path of spiritual progress? That's outlined by the 12 steps. And we remember we build an arch to freedom in steps 1 through 9 that we pass through in step 10 into the world of the Spirit. And then we're in that world and we want to stay on that path. On page 84, it says, you've entered the world of the Spirit. Anybody think that's a good idea? And what does that mean? It means you've left your self-centered world where you were managing your life and it was an effing mess. And you've done enough work to clear your head of all of your old ideas and your resentments and your fears so you have a relationship with God. You've said the prayers for fear and anger. You've worked in your shame and guilt. You're making amends. You're working on removing your character defects with God's help every day. So now you're in a new relationship with Him in this world. It says, what do you do in there? You continue to grow in understanding and effectiveness. And you watch with God all day. And then it tells us on the recovered promises on the next page is that if you're in fit spiritual condition, you're walking day by day in the path of spiritual progress, alcohol won't be a problem anymore. You won't be in conflict with everybody and everything. You'll react differently if you're in fit spiritual condition. Anybody think that's a good idea? But then they give you a warning. Alcohol is pretty cunning and baffling and powerful. It's a mortal foe. You have a daily reprieve based on maintaining this fit spiritual condition. And then they give you another must. You must carry a vision of God's will in all activities, and you must seek knowledge of His will for you and the power to carry that out. So if you do that, somebody says, if you do chapter 5 and 6, everything in it, you'll never drink again. If you work steps 3 through 11 and you're living in step 12. If I persist in this, remarkable things will happen. We heard that today from Scott. When I look back, this is the thing that I like to do when I get into a little bit of ungratitude or self-pity or some nonsense in my head. I look back and I realize the things which have come to me when I put myself in God's hands on February 8th of 2002 were better than anything I could have planned. I couldn't have foreseen that day that I would be here today reading the big book and teaching the big book. Who would have thought that? And so many things have happened, but the most amazing things is that I have a relationship with the power that gives me a power to live. And the greatest gift I have is I have peace a lot of the time. I can have peace, and I can have peace even if things aren't good out there. I can have peace. And that's all I wanted from alcohol and drugs was to have peace. And I can get that now from my relationship with God. Then here's another promise. If I follow the dictates of a higher power, I will presently live, that means in the now, I will presently live in a new and wonderful world if I'm following God's guidance, no matter what my present circumstances. Now, what does that mean? What it means to me is that if I'm connected to God and seeking God, And I will live in a new and wonderful world with him, that no matter what is going on out there, it'll be okay. Isn't that a great promise? I don't depend on circumstances anymore to be happy. I was happy Duke won, but if they lost, I would have gotten over it. Might have taken an hour or two. But I'm happy. I can be happy now no matter the circumstances. So I don't mean happy. I can be serene. I can be calm with it. I can be at peace. I always wanted circumstances to make me feel good, and then when that didn't work, I drank. Now I can feel good no matter the circumstances with God. It says we can handle calamity with serenity. So that's a powerful paragraph. It's on page 100, but it's talking to the new person, and it's also talking to the people who's been here a while. So if your life isn't good and you've been in there a while, maybe you need to follow the dictates of God. Maybe you need to work the steps, get back in the book. And then you'll be okay no matter what your circumstances are. So that's a review from last week. It's powerful paragraphs to me, so I wanted to review them. When working with a man and his family, so you work with the whole family, you should take care not to participate in their quarrels. That's a good suggestion. You may spoil your chance of being helpful if you do. But urge upon a man's family that he has been a very sick person and should be treated accordingly. It doesn't mean you should enable them, but you have to understand that the alcoholic is ill. They have no power to keep from drinking. And because they drink and they have no power not to drink, they upset the family. And then sober, they don't have a way of living with God where they can have a manageable life, and they get irritable, restless, and discontent. It said you should warn against arousing resentment or jealousy. That's hard. You should point out that his defects of character are not going to disappear overnight. We don't get better overnight. One thing I've heard a lot is somebody sober 3 weeks and they want to know why the wife's still upset with him. I said, well, you're the tornado coming out of the cellar after the tornado, and you've devastated your family, and you say, well, isn't it great? I'm sober 3 weeks. You see, it's not going to happen. It's not, it doesn't repair one day. What's that paragraph Brian likes? You know, we make amends to the family, but we have a long period of reconstruction ahead. It's a path for both parties. And that's where both parties need to get active in a spiritual program. That's why Al-Anon's so important for the spouse. And remember, the defects of character may never disappear. Show them that he has entered upon a period of growth. Ask them to remember when they are impatient the blessed fact of his sobriety. So, I told somebody last night that the program works better if you're sober. Now, I was being very serious, because this person is having trouble not drinking. I said, well, get down on your knees, and I told him what time it was, and give your life to God and tell him not to drink tonight. Don't let me drink tonight. Get desperate and seek God and you won't drink. And then eventually God will give you enough grace and you work the steps and your obsession's lifted. If you have been successful in solving your own domestic problems, and also that really is talking about that moment of complete defeat and complete surrender. And some people haven't hit it yet, and my sponsor, Cliff, God bless him, he died in 2008, my first sponsor. He used to say, somebody would be doing this talk, and he'd say, you need to get him more booze. Now, he was a wonderful man and loved everybody, but what he was saying is they're not defeated yet. And if someone's not defeated, I can't make them defeated. And when you're defeated, your natural inclination immediately is to go to God and ask God to help you, or something outside of yourself. If you've been successful in solving your own domestic problems, tell the newcomer's family how that was accomplished. So if you've had issues and you're married and you're in recovery, you can help by telling what you've done or you and your spouse have done. In this way, you can set them on the right track without being critical of them. The story of how you and your wife settled your difficulties is worth any amount of criticism. Notice that they're spending time here because our relationships are in disarray when we come in here. And those are the relationships that are so dear to us, and they're fragile because of the situation that initially, and over time, it takes time, and it takes a lot of spiritual guidance and work. Assuming we are spiritually fit. Now here they're moving on to another area of this chapter where they're going to talk about us and alcohol when we're in recovery. Because I told somebody last week that my wife drinks wine, I poured for her, and they couldn't believe it. I said, well, you know, it's just a liquid in a bottle. It can't do anything for me today, thank God, for the grace of God. Assuming you're spiritually fit. Now, this is a big assumption. So how do you know if you're spiritually fit? Have you prayed today? Have you sought God? Are you actively working the steps with someone as a sponsor or a sponsee or both? Are you inventorying each day? Are you doing your nightly review? Are you praying in the morning for God to direct your thinking? Are you seeking God? How do you know if you're spiritually fit? You're at peace. You feel like you have some, you realize that God can do for you what you cannot do for yourself. You know you have a go-to guy. You have a relationship. Now, if you're spiritually fit, you can do all sorts of things alcoholics are not supposed to do. People have said we must not go where liquor is served. We must not have it in our homes. We must shun friends who drink. We must avoid moving pictures where you couldn't turn on your TV anymore. I mean, which show drinking seeds? We must not go into bars. Our friends must hide their bottles if we go to their houses. We mustn't think or be reminded about alcohol at all. Our experience shows that this is not necessarily so. Now, here's a really important paragraph. We meet these conditions every day, don't we? An alcoholic who cannot meet them still has an alcoholic mind. That's why if you're new, it's so important you find somebody, you get into the book, you start working the steps and seeking God right away. Because if you're sober without program, you have no power. And if you're sober alone without a sponsor group, studying, praying, a direction, you're alone. You'll hear around the holidays, oh, it's going to be a tough time. Well, it doesn't have to be a tough time. They're going to tell you why. Now, what is an alcoholic mind? Now, Roland Hazard had that when he went to Dr. Young, and after a year of therapy, he left and thought he understood himself perfectly, remember? He had his crap together, this is 1932 or 3. He got on the train leaving Switzerland and was drunk by the time he got to Paris. So he goes back to Dr. Young and he says, what happened? So Dr. Young said, well, it's not in the book, but he said, you weren't really honest with me, Roland. You didn't tell me the truth, but you have the mind of a chronic alcoholic. The mind of a chronic alcoholic has no power to keep from drinking. Is completely powerless. At certain times, cannot recall the humiliation and defeat of a moment ago, will drink no matter what the consequences have been. They have no power to say no to alcohol. Now, what happens if you have a recovered mind? On page 85, if you're in fit spiritual condition, you will react normally. You will recoil from alcohol as from a hot flame. It will have no power over you. So if you're still struggling with the obsession, you need to work the steps harder, and you need to pray more, and you need to get further into wherever you are in the program. Now, it doesn't mean that you'll have power over alcohol, but you'll have a power in your life that will give you choice. I never get smart enough to know that I, on my own, I can't drink or use. But what I do is I know that I can seek the power that gives me choice. If I think I have the power today, then I won't seek the power. So I have to remind myself I have the power to choose to seek the person, the power that gives me choice. I will never have power on my own. And if I have a relationship with God, then I will have power over alcohol or anything. His only chance of sobriety, if you have an alcoholic mind, is to go to the Greenland ice cap. But even there, an Eskimo might turn up with a bottle of scotch. I want to tell you, if you're an alcoholic, there's no place you could go where you won't find booze if you want it. I just wish, Dr. Bob says at the end of his story, if only you had half the desire for recovery that you had when you wanted that drink. Only half, he says, if you only had half of that, you'd make it. Ask any woman who has sent her husband to distant places on the theory he would escape the alcohol problems. This is a powerful paragraph here. In our belief, any scheme, a scheme is make plans, especially in a devious way, of combating alcoholism, which proposes to shield the sick man from temptation, is doomed to failure. So you could have your scheme that you're going to know your triggers. You're going to carry around your trigger list. I love that. Your trigger list. And you'll look at it when the trigger list comes up. And looking at that, you're going to say, oh, it's a trigger. I'm not going to drink. Isn't that preposterous? Because there's no shield from you and the drink. From temptation is doomed to failure. What is your shield? A shield is a piece of armor. What is the shield that protects you from the drink? It's God. It's your relationship with God. It's never going to be knowledge, except if it's knowledge of God. And so if an alcoholic tries to shield himself, he may succeed for a little while. Notice he's doing it himself, but he usually winds up with a bigger explosion than ever. We have tried these methods. The attempts to do the impossible have always failed. This is why self-knowledge won't fix you. Self-knowledge should take you to the point where you're desperate to seek that knowledge of God and a power in your life that'll keep you from drinking and will give you a way to live. So our rule is never to avoid a place where there's drinking if we have a legitimate reason for being there. Now remember Bill W. in 1935 on May 9th or 10th, he had lost his business deal. He was sober 6 months. He had not found anybody that he could sober up. His deal went through. He's in Akron. He was from New York. He had no money to pay the bill. He didn't know what to do. He was very disappointed because he was separating from God. He had decided what he needed to be happy, and it was this business deal. And he was in really bad shape. So he heard the music in the bar. So he says, well, I'll just go in there, listen to music. And remember, as he's walking through the door, his mind says, well, maybe I could have a drink. And then here's where God made his move. He said to Bill, bad idea, Bill. And what Bill says, he shivered and fear shook him. And he turned away. He had a relationship with God through those 6 months because he'd worked with others, tried to help people. And that relationship gave him the power to choose. And we're here today. He turned away. Now, he wasn't any better or smarter than we were. It's all because he had a relationship with God. This includes bars, nightclubs, dances, receptions, weddings, or whoopee parties. I didn't look up whoopee party. I don't want to know. To a person who has had experience with an alcoholic, this may seem like tempting providence, but it isn't. Stop it. Calm down. You guys are getting worked up here. They're starting to think about alcohol. I can see it. You may note that we made an important qualification. All right, calm down. Therefore, ask yourself on each occasion, have I any good social, business, or personal reason for going to this place? I mean, what are your reasons? I'm expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such places. If you answer these questions satisfactorily, you should have no apprehension, no fear. Go or stay away, whatever seems best, but be sure you're on solid spiritual ground. Are you centered on God before you start? And that your motives in going in is thoroughly good. What is your motives? Is it to be of service? Is it to serve God and others? Now, what I tell people, and I've done this, I haven't done it any recently because I tell people, take your coin. Take a coin. your 30 days, 60, 90 days, put it in your pocket, hold it. If something disturbs you, grab the coin. If you disturb too much, leave, just leave. It's not worth being any place where you're disturbed. And carry God with you all the time. And you could do that if you knew all the time, put your coin all day long. I used to do it. I bring God in my life all the time. And so use your coins for that. And use your coins as a sign that you need help, that you couldn't have gotten the coin without God. Do not think what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring into it. Isn't that true of any interaction we have? Whenever I'm interacting with someone, what am I bringing into it? I had someone that bothered me on Monday. And it was an unusual conversation. And they told me my heart was in the right place. Well, that means that they thought I was a jerk. But we had a discussion, and they didn't want to listen, and I decided not to argue. So then I saw that person on Friday, and I said, I need to bring love into this situation, and I'm going to get love out of it. And I did, and it was fine. And, you know, people have their people have their opinions. They're different than mine. It doesn't mean I'm right and they're wrong, but I don't want to be disturbed. And so I tried to bring love into it. And whenever I do that, I find I get it back. I'll tell you, it works at home. But if you're shaky, you better work with another alcoholic instead. So in other words, if you're in a shaky situation, turn away from whatever it is and turn to helping others. If you can't find an alcoholic, find anyone. Turn yourself away from yourself to others. Why sit with a long face in places where there's drinking, sighing about the good old days? If it is a happy occasion, try to increase the pleasure of those there. If a business occasion, go and attend to your business enthusiastically. If you're with a person who wants to eat in a bar, by all means go along. Let your friends know they are not there to change their habits on your account. Now remember, when this book was written, people lived in neighborhoods. There was no TV. They went to the neighborhood bar or whatever for their social lives, to get out of the house. So people were always around alcohol. At a proper time and place, explain to your friends, if you want to, why alcohol disagrees with you. I've been on these cruises where all the booze is included free all the time, and people will ask me after a while why I don't drink. We had the toast one night, the little toast, and I sat at the table and I said, "Well, I don't know if you have enough booze." I said, "I could probably drink this, but I may not make it off the ship. Who knows?" I'll have no power once it's in my body. I said, so I'm allergic to it. So I'm not allowed to take it. So they looked at me strange. They kind of moved their chairs away a little bit. You know how that is, you know, he's strange. But one cruise, it was about a 15 or 16 day cruise, this couple we had spent some time with, he told me the last night that he hadn't had a drink for 4 days. And I said, well, I have a book that if you want to quit drinking, it'll help you. Now, why did he say that? Because he was probably an alcoholic. And I may have helped him. And I gave him a copy of the big book. I had one. I haven't heard from him, but you never know. It says, if you do this thoroughly, a few people will ask you to drink. Now, the other thing I found is a lot of people don't want to tell people they're in AA. Oh, no. I don't want anybody to know. You know, first of all, nobody really cares about you. We think we're so important that everybody's going to go, oh, he goes to AA. I've never heard anybody say anything bad about somebody who went to AA. Now, people who refuse to go to AA, that's a different matter. But AA is very well respected. And people come here, people respect that you know you have a problem, you're trying to do something to help yourself. I've never heard anybody disparaged for going to AA, except by people who probably needed to be here. And so don't be afraid of that. We are very well respected. You know why AA is very well respected? Because we have no opinion on anything. And we're not in the news, and we don't have opinions, and that principle of anonymity, and Mickey's shaking her head, that principle of anonymity has really helped us. We just deal with our primary purpose of helping the alcoholic get sober. We don't worry about other things. So don't be afraid if people know you're an alcoholic. Most of them know anyway. Now you're getting back into the social life of the world. Don't start to withdraw again. Now, I'm going to end with this. Your job now, this is your job if you're in AA, is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. Does it say alcoholics? All people, maximal helpfulness. So never hesitate to go if you can be helpful. Every situation you go in, am I going to be a maximal helpfulness? Now, I don't do that all the time. Nobody does. But I try to remember that. Remember, what is our purpose in AA? It's in the book. It says we're trying to put our lives in order, right? Page 77. But our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximal service to others. Fit ourselves to be of maximal service to God and the people about us. So how do I fit myself to do that? I pray every day. I inventory. I'm working with others. I'm working with my sponsor. I'm studying the book. I'm praying. I'm seeking God. So I'm going to end with that line. Is that okay? And we'll pick it up next week on page 100. We'll finish that at 102. We'll finish that, and then we'll start on To Wives, which is a powerful, powerful chapter. Thank you, guys.